Hopefully, you all got the message that I sent out last night, but I know it came a little bit late. So for those of you who did do Part C of your pre-lab, I do apologize that you did a little extra work, but we are going to be covering that separation scheme in lab lecture on Tuesday. So you will still need to know that scheme, but technique-wise, you've already done two sets of extractions. You're doing more extractions this quarter, so you're not really going to be missing out in terms of hands-on technique. But that theory of using an acid and base aqueous layer, we do need to cover. But we're going to barely finish parts A and B. And just since already people are asking me, if somehow on Tuesday we don't finish part B, it's likely you're just going to have your melting points left to do, which you can do that while you've got your next experiment sitting around and stirring. If I have to therefore push the due date of that first lab report back a little bit so that everybody finishes, that's fine. But don't totally freak out if Tuesday comes and you're not totally done. Now, that doesn't mean relax too much either. You still need to work at a good pace. But I'm already aware that we may not finish in the time allotted. And I don't know how we ever got this lab done in four periods. I must have just canceled lab lecture before, but which of this information should I throw away then? None so far. So that's why I canceled part C. For part B and part A, let me review, because in both of the other sections, there's been a lot of confusion what you need to accomplish. For part A, you had the two compounds, which you then formed two layers from. You added the sodium hydroxide, which reacted with benzoic acid, and only because water's more dense than the organic layer. It is not just because it's water and water's always on the bottom. No, it's because water's more dense that's the bottom layer. So when you drained that out, you had benzoic acid in water, which is therefore the aqueous layer, which is also called the hydroxide layer. Leftover, what's called the neutral compound, the non-acid-based compound, the naphthalene, that's left behind in the ether. So water, hydroxide, benzoic acid, or benzoate till you neutralize it, and then ether, naphthalene. Part B, you had three compounds. You added the bicarbonate first. Because bicarbonate's a weaker base than hydroxide, naphthol couldn't react with it. And so what you get is just the benzoate forming, benzoic acid reacting. So in part B, that first extraction with an aqueous layer, the bicarbonate layer, that pulls out just the benzoic acid. So benzoic acid in the bicarbonate aqueous layer. Left over in that organic layer then was naphthol and naphthalene. You then added hydroxide to that. Then, because the hydroxide was a strong enough base, it neutralized the naphthol. So in the hydroxide layer of part B, it's not benzoic, but it's the naphthol that you have. And then, left over in that organic layer, after the second extraction, then you still have naphthalene, the neutral compound, in ether. Which every time in this whole experiment so far, the organic layer, the ether layer, has been on top. What do we need to finish then? Well, you need the masses of all five of those compounds. And then we did talk about last time about tearing before actually evaporating or isolating, correct? Which means measure the flask mass you're going to use first so you don't have to worry about scraping it all out. Because the only compound we're going to characterize is benzoic acid. So the two naphthalene samples, you get their mass, then dispose of them. The naphthol, isolate it, get its mass, dispose of it. I'd recommend that these compounds you isolate today, you wait until Tuesday to take their masses so that you have a chance for any residual solvent or water to evaporate so you get a more accurate mass. Now, what about the benzoic acid that's in the hydroxide layer of part A and then the bicarbonate layer of part B? After you get their individual masses, combine the samples. And we're going to do recrystallization only on benzoic acid. So recrystallization skip for all the other compounds and all the other layers. I will give you the recommended procedure for recrystallization in a moment. The only melting point that we're going to do is of that recrystallized, purified benzoic acid. Because we've done melting points, or you've likely done melting points in Chem 1, so we don't need to belabor melting points in here, but we should at least go through one so we can review the theory behind it. So you're going to have your five layers. You're going to isolate five samples. Three of them, the two naphthalenes and the naphthol, you're just going to get the mass of, then dispose of. The two benzoic acids, you get their separate masses, then combine the samples and recrystallize that whole thing. Do go ahead and get a final mass of your recrystallized product. And so because of that, out of everything you should do first, finish with the benzoic acid layers today so you can get them recrystallized so you can leave it over the weekend to dry out. Then you'll get your accurate mass measurement, and then you'll take the melting point of just that final product.
Part A.
Part A and Part B. So the you combine the benzoic acid from the hydroxyl layer of Part A with the benzoic acid from the bicarbonate layer of Part B once you're ready to do recrystallization. Was that fairly clear? No, the only melting point you're going to take is when you're done with the recrystallization. I don't want you taking melting points of every compound, a waste of our time in this kind of course. After you combine them, after you recrystallize them, then you're going to do a melting point.
Would you give a dot diagram?
Yes.
I want to make sure if I'm supposed to weigh something, I can miss out
on something
because once I toss it, I can't go back and get it.
So, A.
If you get two benzoic acid products, one part A, one part B, you take their individual masses, you combine them, recrystallize them, and then get a final mass and get the melting point of the Does that help? So, benzoic acid, those two you combine after you take the masses, then you recrystallize, then you take the melting point. What happens? It really doesn't show up that. Then, for the naphthalene in either A or B, you're just taking the mass, and then the naphthol, you're only taking the mass. Now, how do we do recrystallization? So, let me tell you first the ideal case of how recrystallization occurs, because recrystallization means dissolve your compound and pull it back out as a crystal again. So first thing you have to do is choose a solvent, which you don't have to go through that step for this lab. I'm going to tell you it's water that we're using. You might think, wait, didn't you start this whole lab off by talking about how benzoic acid's not soluble in water? Well, yeah, but that's water that's at room temperature or below, that it's insoluble. Get it towards the boiling point, benzoic acid becomes much more soluble. The ideal behavior would be that you have zero solubility at room temperature or in an ice bath, and virtually infinite solubility at high temperature. Why? Because if you didn't have zero solubility when cold, that means some compound's going to always be left behind in the solvent. And in real life, that is what happens.
If you have very low solubility, you have very low loss, but that means you're going to have loss in recrystallization. Because of that, you want very high solubility at high temperatures so that you use the minimum amount of solvent possible so that the least amount of compound remains behind once you cool it off. So ideal solvent behavior for recrystallization. The ideal behavior is the solute, the target solute, should have zero solubility at room temperature, which RT, I know we have the equation RT ln of K, but when I use RT, it's going to mean room temperature in here. So I have zero solubility at room temperature and virtually infinite solubility. Near the solvent's boiling point. Then, as I said a moment ago, in reality, whatever that is, solutes will have trace solubility. Even below room temperature. So the minimum possible quantity of solvent should be used. To minimize loss of product. So given our goal is to use the minimum amount of solvent possible, here's what I recommend. Did I mention what sand baths are in this section? Yes? Okay. So I would recommend using a hot plate with a sand bath. And then have two either beakers or Erlenmeyers. I tend to prefer Erlenmeyers because they've got some kind of constriction at the top that prevents things from splattering out, just in case you don't do things quite correctly. So in one of them, you'll have the solvent. In the other one, you'll have your target solid compound. You heat both of them up until you get to the point where the solvent is about to boil. Your solid might melt. Not a problem, but something you've got to watch out for as you're trying to do the following. You first take a little bit of that hot solvent, use a pipette or something, and transfer maybe half a milliliter or so to the solid container. If you're worried about, okay, well, how much water do we really need? I hadn't looked it up yet myself, but we could easily Google benzoic acid 100 degree water, and I bet you the solubility will pop right up because it's not the first time this experiment's been done. So if you're really worried about it, I strongly encourage you to look it up. But transfer a little bit over. Let it heat up again because as you pull it out, as soon as you pull it out, it's cooling down. So once you put that solvent in the solid, let it heat for a bit and stir it. In this case, don't use the magnetic stirrer because it's going to be off-center from your plate most likely, so it won't stir well, one. And then it's better that you get in there with your hands and so you don't have the stir bar blocking your view of the solution. What you're looking for is the following. If you add the solvent over and the solid completely dissolves, then you've added enough and possibly too much solvent because it's all gone. What hopefully will happen the first time you transfer is it won't all disappear. Some of it will dissolve, some of it remains behind. And so you keep doing these small portion transfers until you get barely to the point where all the solid disappears. If you do it that way, you've minimized the solvent, and so you're going to minimize your product loss. A third possibility, though, is you get two layers of liquid. And that happens if your solid melts during this process. So if you get two layers, that means there's not enough solvent to take that liquid solute and dissolve it. So even if it melts, if you have enough solvent, you'll only have one layer. If you have two layers, again, that means that not everything has dissolved yet. So to summarize that, you're going to transfer small portions of the hot solvent, one at a time, into the solvent. The hot solvent, yeah. So you get the water, in this case, up to the boiling point, just about. Transfer half a mil or a mil over and try to dissolve it. Doesn't work, do it again, and keep doing it only up to the point where that solid barely disappears. And again, this warning to watch out for layers forming, which indicates melted but not yet dissolved solute. Once you have done this process, you've dissolved it. Now you need to get the crystals back again. So take it off the heat source, let it cool down to room temperature first, and then put it in an ice bath. Why do it like that? Two reasons. Even though this is lab glassware, a strong thermal shock could still potentially break your glassware. So you don't want to take boiling hot glassware and put it straight in an ice bath. The other reason is that, in general, slower cooling encourages larger crystal growth, so it'll make it a little bit easier to isolate your compound. Some of you, when you do this, are going to get powdery benzoic acid. Some of you are going to get crystalline. Some of you are going to get something that looks like a paste. And it all depends on how much water is around and how quickly the crystals formed once it cooled down. But you should all get benzoic acid, and those samples will look more similar once you have let them air dry. So, once dissolved, first cool to room temperature, then place in an ice bath, and then you filter just like you did when you completed, for example, part A, when you collected those crystals on a Hirschfeld. You're going to do the exact same thing. I would recommend maybe you wash with just a small portion of ice-cold water to make sure that you've washed through any potential water-soluble impurities. That is actually the point of recrystallization, where once the crystals form, the impurities stay behind. Now, what if you accidentally add way too much solvent? Well, you could boil off the solvent, but that means you're leaving the impurities behind again. So, once you're done dissolving, cool to room temperature, then place in an ice bath, and then filter and dry. Now, I don't think this happened to the other sections, but one thing that can happen in the process of recrystallization is that you do everything right, and you know that you use that minimum amount of solvent, but you can't get your crystals to reform. And that can happen if you form a supersaturated solution, where the solution cools down enough where it should form a precipitate, but somehow physically the solute and solvent are so interacting that the solute just doesn't clump together and fall out of solution. So you have to physically disturb the solution. Sometimes just stirring it, agitating it aggressively. Sometimes that'll make the crystals form. Sometimes, and I don't actually know the reason this works, because whoever taught me also didn't know the reason, but you can scratch carefully the inside glass of the container, which I presume opens up little rough spots, which allows sites for nucleation to occur, and sometimes that will induce crystallization. So either agitation, or don't scrape so hard you break your glassware, but scraping the inside of the glassware can sometimes initiate crystallization. Once you've done this, you finish with your benzoic acid, then you have the other three layers, which again, you're only taking the masses of, and then that's it for this experiment. So are there any questions? Everybody sure what they're doing? Then let's get to work.